You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Babylon 5 ended a great war and united 100 alien races in peace. Danger didn't die. It just went underground with new heroes and new evils to carry the torch.
We need to make sure they all understand we will not be intimidated.
What is wrong with you people?
We have to set him against himself.
It's an entire new season of Babylon 5 with all new episodes.
And so it begins.
There is a hole in your mind.
What do you want?
No one here is exactly what he appears.
Nothing's the same anymore.
Commander Sinclair is being reassigned.
Why don't you eliminate the entire non-home
race? I want a reaching out of the stock.
Who are you?
President Clark has signed a decree today declaring
martial
law.
These orders have forced us to declare independence.
Weapons and
supplies. People get off their encounter-suited butts and do something.
You are the one who watches.
To Zahadu, who will die.
Why are you here? Do you have anything worth living for?
Think of my beautiful city.
Giants in the playground.
Now get the hell out of our galaxy!
We are here to place President Clark under arrest.
Turn around. Very, very slowly.
Hello, Mr. Garibaldi. Good to see you again. I was wondering how you were doing. Have you written, called?
Shut up.
Obviously haven't improved your manners.
Hello, and welcome to the Epsilon 3, a Babylon 5 rewatch podcast. Each week, we review an episode of the 1990s sci-fi TV classic, Babylon 5.
This week, Season 5, Episode 12, Day of the Dead.
I'm Paul.
I'm Dan.
I'm Sean.
And we are the Epsilon 3.
And the synopsis. Babylon 5 becomes part of the Bracari Day of the Dead festival, in which people are visited by the deceased from their past. Famous entertainers Rebo and Zooty, Penn and Teller, visit the station. Written by whom? Not written by JMS.
What?
I know. After so long, there's so many episodes that he's been written, I think since almost the first or even second season, I think it was. This is the first time that this has been written purely by somebody else. Written by Neil Gaiman.
I've heard of that guy.
Yeah.
Very cool. Very cool indeed. When I saw that name pop up on the screen, I was like, ooh, that's good.
Yeah.
That could explain a few things, maybe.
It does explain a lot. I think it does explain a lot. And directed by Doug Leffler. This episode was released on March 11th, 1998. And takes place, apparently. For some reason, I haven't put the takes place date down. So
takes place on the Day of the Dead.
Of course it does.
Here we go.
And in the DVD order, it's episode 8, but here we're watching it as episode 12. So who knows when it takes place?
Well, you see, if this had been earlier on,
Wando and Jakar still would have been on Centauri Prime.
Yes,
even though they're in this episode. So
exactly.
So
it doesn't make any sense to have them here.
Bit of wobbly time stuff.
Timey-wimey stuff.
You know.
Yeah.
But it makes me think that if it is a Neil Gaiman script, did Neil Gaiman like the show, or like he was aware of the show, wrote a spec script, and then they kind of just fudged it to make it into season 5 because there wasn't enough time to bring it into 4 or whatever season he pitched it. And that's why Londo and Jakar are in there, is because he loved those characters, and so he wrote those characters, and therefore... Oh, no, it doesn't kind of fit into the whole arc of what's going on this year.
And maybe they had to release it at this time because that was the only time Penn and Teller were available. Who knows?
It's lots of things.
Yeah.
But I remember you saying, like, in our... I don't know if it's made it into the edits in the upcoming episodes or the ones that are going to come for us, but obviously have already happened for our audience. But you mentioned something about how Penn, Bruce Boxleitner doesn't like Penn.
And I imagine that's probably going to be in the trivia for this episode.
Very much
but
so.
I was looking for it because you'd mentioned it, and I really could not see anything. Really could not tell. I mean, there were moments and scenes where I thought, oh, was that written because they don't get on? So they just kind of wrote a reason for Bruce to sort of leave the set. Oh, I had to go and deal with this Day of the Dead business and then, you know, come back into the scene later. But it really did not play out at all.
No, you wouldn't know he hated him.
Mm. And if it was mutual, that Penn was also showing the same thing.
I'd obviously read it and I told you about it. I was watching it carefully and I was thinking, I can't see Bruce Boxleitner showing any signs that he didn't like the guy. He's going very much over the top to say how much he does like the guy, which is what his character is supposed to be. He's supposed to be absolutely loves these people and he's fawning to them and all this type of thing. I was almost looking at whichever one it is. I don't know which one's which. Penn, isn't it? I was looking at him thinking, it's almost as though he's not treating Bruce Boxleitner with the respect he should do. Oh, you're just another fan, if you like, type of thing. And I didn't see anywhere where it didn't look as though he didn't like him. But so they were both being professional about it, if that's the case. Mm. But it did make me think that maybe Boxleitner's performance was a little over the top. Because
in contrast to Logley,
exactly. But if you didn't know about it, you wouldn't see it. So it's only my opinion's only colored by the fact that I was looking for something that may not actually be there,
and I'd forgotten about that whole thing,
that's it, exactly. So if you don't see it, then they were both professionals, it's simple as that. So this takes place on March the 3rd, 2262.
Okay.
Ah, there we go.
And the guest stars.
Last week's took place in June.
Yes, which is a bit bizarre. Yes, which I don't know how they work out when it takes place. Mm-hmm. I know that they look into the script and they see if there's certain dates that are mentioned later on or whether that's it's mentioned as to where it should fit. But certainly this is probably the only time that they fumble the timeline.
Mm-hmm. But unless it was March on the Bakiri homeworld for that one square mile, and then that's obviously it's still June on Babylon 5.
Exactly. Now that is a good point because part of the ship does go to the Bakiri homeworld. Where who knows what date it is?
Could be anything.
Yeah. Well, it's obviously Day of the Dead date.
But exactly. Mm. Yeah. It's always Day of the Dead somewhere.
That's true. Okay, and our guest stars. Penn Jillette as Rebo, Teller as Zooty, Bridget Flannery as Zoe, Marie Marshall as Private First Class Elizabeth Dodger Derman, Fabiana Udeno as Adira Tyree, Ed Vassar as Morden, Jonathan Campbell? It's not even close. Jonathan Chapman as Bracari Ambassador, Skip Stellarect as Customs Officer, Ismail Kanata as Bracari Salesman, and Harlan Ellison as the voice of Zooty. So there you go. Seeing as he doesn't speak. Uncredited is Bill Blair as Alien, Layla Huff as Naron Cadet, and Mary Major as ISN Reporter. So, guys, as if we didn't know, Sean, what do you think of this episode?
Well, it's no secret that this is my favorite episode of the entire Babylon 5 series. I love it. It's awesome.
So why do you like it so much?
You know what? I don't know. It's the most memorable. I love maybe woo-woo stuff with the whole dead people coming back to life. It's just fun and it flows and there's not a dull moment. The whole Lockley and Zoe thing, I wanted to know more. You know, it's just, you get to see the people from before. I just love it. I don't know why.
I mean, are you a fan of Penn and Teller, for example, or is it just...
No, I don't care about anything with them, guys.
Yeah,
that, so that doesn't matter.
It's more about the sort of Mardi Gras feel to the, you know,
it must be. Yeah, it's just it's a lot of fun, and seeing Jakar's reaction to it and how he regrets not being in it at the end and all that stuff. It was just, I love it. Doesn't need a reason.
Fair enough, Dan.
Well, my reason for loving the episode is there's a half-naked fiery redhead in Garibaldi's bed. But I mean, if Sean doesn't want to be up and honest about it, then fair enough. Fine. but no, yeah, I really enjoyed it. The fact it was Neil Gaiman just elevated it straight away. The fact that I could get into this, I knew there was going to be some spooky woo-woo stuff, as Sean just said. It doesn't quite make sense. Like, how exactly does this work? Like, they transport it? Is it Technomage technology that somehow the Brakiri have, but the Brakiri have had Technomage technology this whole time and haven't decided to use it in the war for some reason? That doesn't make any sense to me, but that's fine. It's just weird for weird's sake, and that's what Neil Gaiman's all about. It's just a nice idea. Just bring back these characters who we loved in previous episodes, whether we never liked the episode, maybe not, but we like the characters. And just have them have conversations, try sort of catch up where the characters have been, sort of judge the characters, see where their arc has taken them. The only thing that I would hold against it is that I wanted more characters to have that interaction.
Right.
Have all of Babylon 5 go through the Day of the Dead so everybody gets their moment. Try and have Marcus come back. It's a shame that we don't have Ivanova guest starring this week so that she could meet Marcus. Why did you do it? And then he comes back and explains the reasons. Mm-hmm. Just so we have a little bit more of a satisfactory payoff. I know we can't have that, but it would have been nice. The niggles that I hold against this episode are just that I wanted more. That's always going to be a good episode. And it does bring back one thing. I haven't noticed that it hasn't been there, but at the end of this episode, there is this return of sort of cosmic stuff going on, cosmic prophecy going on, or Kosh coming back with his warning that that Lockley has to then deliver to Sheridan, that there's this bigger journey, this bigger mission going on. We've been so bogged down in Brown Sector for so many weeks. It was just nice to get back to that cosmic drama that we've been having for Babylon 5, which has been so sorely missing. So again, this episode just pays off in so many different ways. So is it worth us going through the episode? I think we all just love this one. Don't we? Should just call it a five and have a day with it? Yeah, fine. Okay, then.
I like the use of bogged down in Brown Sector. That's like a euphemism for something.
Bogged down in Byron Brown Sector. Yeah.
I mean, maybe it's not what I'm, not my, I wonder if this will make my top 10. I don't know yet. Because I haven't actually scored it yet, as I just suddenly realised. But I mean, the Day of the Dead part of it was really good. As you say, Dan, interesting theories as to why this part of the ship was actually teleported, if teleported is the right word, back to the Brakiri homeworld. Is this something that happens in other places? You know, in other worlds where they say it's the Day of the Dead, so we'll transport a part of your planet to our planet. How big is their planet? Can they take all of these planets from all around the galaxy with bits of it inside? I mean, they took a mile-long piece in this. It's not as insubstantial piece of ship. And where did it go? I mean, if it was taken away, where was the hole? Why didn't we see the outside from inside and all this? Hey, where's it gone? You know. That's the whole point, isn't it? You don't have to explain anything in a Neil Gaiman style program. So, just look at Good Omens, for goodness sake. One of the best things on TV of all time. So, but makes bonkers, absolutely bonkers, and makes no sense whatsoever. I do like it. I like it a lot. The Penn and Teller, I knew of them when I first watched it. But having not seen any of their shows or anything, or maybe just an odd clip here or there, or a TV appearance over here in the UK, I didn't really know much about them. I get the jokes, I get the idea that Teller doesn't speak, etc., etc. But it just felt a bit. Why are they here? What did they do? Were they there for the Day of the Dead part of it, or were they just happened to be there and this was happening? I don't know. It just seemed to be an odd thing to throw in there. It was as though they had appeared on the set. They were recording something next door, and somebody said, "Hey, come in and we'll write some lines for you quickly, and we'll shove you in a few scenes." And they said, yeah, we're all up for that. Oh God, it's that box light and the dude. Oh God, do we have to be in it with him? Oh, we've signed the contract now. We'll have to do it. So you know, I don't really know what their purpose was. I mean, any other episode, they could have had a whole episode to themselves.
Classic B story.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right, B, but it could have been an A. I mean, you know, some of the stuff we've had recently, that could have been an A story with something happening with them. You know, they turn out to be spies or something. I don't know, anything. You know, you think they're good guys, they're not, or whatever, you know. They've really been sort of gathering intelligence for, you know, for Babylon 5 over the years. You know, you think they're comedians, ha-ha, or magicians. We can make things disappear like this piece of paper with all this information written on it. Oh, you know, and then suddenly they present it to, you know, Sheridan. Anything like that would have been better than just turning up and being celebrities, because it makes Penn and Teller feel as though they're celebrities because they are celebrities and not, you know, entertainers or good magicians or anything. But anyway, maybe it was just massaging their egos. I don't know what it was. I just didn't understand why they were there. So that sort of took the edge off the rest of it, really, which they could have opened it up to, as Sean said, to more characters. Everybody has a go at, you know, regretting something they did in the past or whatever, or, you know, missing somebody, which they've all got. So, but we got what we got, and it was still a very good episode. So, a tall man in a bowler hat arrives at Babylon 5 with a huge bag. He places the bag on the table so customs can take a look at it. When he opens it, out pops a smaller man, much to the amusement of everybody who's gathered around. That's what I was going to say as well. He is a tall man. I don't know his height. I haven't looked at him, but Penn is quite tall. And Bruce Boxleitner is about 6'2 or something, 6'1, 6'2. He's quite tall, maybe taller than that. So obviously Penn's quite tall. And I'm wondering whether suddenly having somebody who's taller than you, when you're used to being the tallest in the room, whether that was anything to do with it. And he's quite a big person as well, isn't he? He's quite a wide person as well as tall. So yeah, I don't know whether that was it. Suddenly, a tall man feels small. Mm-hmm. Being a small person, I know what that's like. I get it from everybody. Anyway, Sheridan and Lockley and Garibaldi are making their way to meet the two new arrivals.
6'6".
Oh, yeah, there you go then. Yes, he's quite tall, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, because
Sheridan... I just looked it up.
Wow. Is Boxleitner about 6'3"?
I didn't look that up.
Because I get the feeling he's about 6'6". Yeah, but 6'6", that's the first size. There's a guy I work with who's 6'10". It's reacher height.
Mm-hmm.
And he's about the same weight, but he's in a different place. But I digress. Where was I? Oh, Sheridan, Lockley and Garibaldi make their way to meet the two new arrivals. Lockley asks Sheridan what he knows about Bracari religious ceremonies, as they want to sell some of Babylon 5 to them for the night. For religious reasons. Londo is being hassled by a street trader who's trying to sell him a candy skull that reminds him of his ex-wife.
It reminds me of my senior ex-wife. What is it?
Candy! Only for carbon-based life forms who can metabolize sugar. Mm. Otherwise, it's decorative ornament.
How much?
You are Centauri Infra-to-be in universe today. Him?
I am Lando Molare.
Tell me, noble Molare.
The trader asks who he would like to meet of those who have gone before us.
Who would you meet of those who have gone before us?
Of the dead? I would meet the first emperor. I have several bones to pick with him.
They are a gift.
Oh, no.
I insist. Oh. May the comet bring you wisdom this night.
Linnea has returned to Babylon 5 and surprises Delenn with a visit to her quarters. He's between training cycles, and as it is the Bracari Day of the Dead, he couldn't miss it. It appears one night every 200 years and apparently is something not to be missed. He asks about Sheridan, and Delenn tells him that he is hosting a party for the two strangers that have arrived, Rebo and Zooty. Zooty has his own universal language. Lockley is not amused, and Shikar is perplexed. Lockley meets up with the Bracari.
Long life to you.
And to you, Ambassador.
Here, for you. The skull is for eating. The comet is a gift from all the Bracari on Babylon 5. It is of great religious significance. You must not refuse it.
Oh, it's very beautiful. Thank you. I must, of course, report the gift. I've taken your request under advisement in my capacity as captain of Babylon 5.
And everything is okay. We can purchase Babylon 5 for the Brakiri. It must be ours by sunset.
They want to buy it, not to rent it.
Well, it's certainly an unusual request. We can normally only rent space around here.
But we must buy it. If we rent it, it is not Brakiri. It's yours, not ours. We'll give it back. It's yours again at sunrise.
I understand that, Ambassador. In this case, I can understand that an exception might need to be made.
Brakiri or night dwelling?
Just my own personal curiosity. It's the Day of the Dead, but it takes place at night.
The Brakiri are night dwelling.
I see.
Suddenly, Shakar bursts in.
Well, everything seems to be in order.
Captain! Please forgive this intrusion. I came as soon as I realized what was happening.
Jakar, as you can see, I'm rather busy, but I believe you know Ambassador Kulenbrock. He's here too.
I know. That is why I came. I strongly advise you against this transaction. It is dangerous and foolish and unwise.
It's not a matter of toleration. Is that a word?
Religious toleration is foolish.
Oh, this is not a matter of toleration. You do not know what you are doing.
The Declaration of Principles of the Alliance. You are familiar with it, I trust.
I wrote it.
It states that religious belief shall be sacrosanct.
Captain, I repeat, you do not know what you are doing.
I believe the captain knows exactly what she is doing. And I, and all the Brakiri on Babylon 5, appreciate it.
Despite Shikar's protests, Lockley allows the Day of the Dead to go ahead. The Brakiri show Garibaldi the part of the station they have bought. They have painted a line on the floor to show which is Brakiri and which part is Babylon 5. Unfortunately, it is right outside Garibaldi's door, so his quarters are now in Brakiri territory. But his shower and the bed are calling him, so he goes inside. Sheridan brings Rebo and Zuti back to his quarters to meet Delenn.
Come in, come in. This is Delenn, my wife and the head of the advisory board for the Alliance.
Madam, we are Rebo and Zuti.
Mimbari humor is based on the failure to obtain emotional or spiritual enlightenment.
What did you say?
You see, Mimbari humor is based not on physical danger or embarrassment or rejection like human humor, but rather on the failure to obtain emotional or spiritual enlightenment.
You see, a lekkokok means both a small fish and the pleasure you get meeting someone for the first time.
You've studied Mimbari humor?
Yeah, Mimbari humor, Narn humor, most forms of humor. What's for dinner? Something smells great.
Sheridan was hoping to have a word with Zuti, but as Rebo says, in 10 years, he's only heard Zuti say one word.
You know, I was really hoping to talk to Zuti without the machine.
Yeah, he never breaks character, not even around me. In 10 years, I've only heard him say one word without the machine.
Oh. What's the word?
Why?
Just curious.
No, that was the word, why. In 10 years, I haven't figured it out myself.
Why?
Well, why? I don't know. It's just what he does. Oh, no, sorry. That's the word. And so begins the Day of the Dead. Everyone is getting ready in their own way. Lockley is reading some reports in her quarters. Lanier is preparing to pray. Malari is reading the newspaper and having a drink. And Lieutenant Corwin is trying to learn how to roll the hat off his head and onto his hand. Just then, Jakar turns up, saying he wants to sleep in the council meeting room, as his quarters are in Brakiri territory. It's a bit of a long walk as well from there, as it turns out. As Lockley is working through her reports, the lights go off. Malari is talking to the Emperor. Of course, it's just an oil painting. But then his lights go off. Then somebody pours another drink into a second glass. It's Adira, the Centauri woman, the only woman Londo truly loved, who last appeared in Season 3, Episode 15, Interludes and Examinations.
And the age difference isn't even a little bit creepy.
No.
Yeah, specifically because
he's now 2 or 3 years older than last time we saw him. So last time he saw her, so she's still the same age. The lights go out in Garibaldi's quarters, and then the shower turns on. Garibaldi grabs his PPG and makes his way towards the shower. It's his old one-night stand private first class Elizabeth Dodger Durnham. Durman. From season 2, episode 10, Gropos. In Lockley's quarters, a young lady appears who turns out to be her dead friend, Zoe. I've seen her before somewhere, but I couldn't pin it down. I looked in IMDb and I couldn't find anything, but she has a very familiar face. Couldn't think who she reminded me of.
You've probably seen this episode before.
I have, but it's not enough to, you know.
It feels like something else, like some drama series, cop drama or something.
Yeah, there was something because it was like the just around her mouth and all that. It was very familiar. It was just like the way she did. But anyway, when I looked at the picture of her, I thought, I can't think where I've seen her before. Apparently, she died of a drug overdose in a bath covered in cockroaches. They reminisce about the bad, good old days. Sheridan is serving food in his quarters to Rebo and Zooty when a message comes through from Lieutenant Corwin. There seems to be a piece of the station missing. They can't reach it and they can't communicate with it. It's over a mile wide, and unfortunately, Lockley's quarters are inside it, so she can't be contacted. Sheridan goes looking for the missing part of the station and finds a red force field. He throws a fire extinguisher at it, and it bounces straight back at him. Lanier is still meditating when suddenly Mr. Morton appears. But why has he come back?
I'm dead. It's my job. Why'd you come back here?
I came for wisdom.
You don't come to the dead for wisdom, Lanier. My head was cut from my body. Even now it rots on a pole outside the Imperial Palace. Birds have taken the hair for their nests. Maggots ate my flesh. And you want wisdom?
Yes, I do.
Wisdom. Let's see. Delenn does not love you as you love her, and she never will.
I know that.
No, you don't. Not in your heart. That's the problem, you see. No one should ever want to talk to the dead.
Lanier tries to leave his quarters, but is trapped by the force field.
Come on, you won't get there by walking. The other side of that corridor is over 200 million light years away. And the air is spread a little thinly in the middle. Think there's any coffee in this place?
Why did you help me? I know what kind of a man you were.
Give a dog a bad name and you can hang him with it. Shouldn't listen to everything Sheridan tells you. Actually, I'm surprised he's not here tonight, since he died at Zaha Doom. Is there any coffee here or not?
He asks him whether Lanier likes being a ranger.
Would you like it any better if I were to tell you that you will betray the Anlashak?
You are lying.
I wish I were.
No. Sheridan did not die at Zaha Doom. If you do not know the present, how can you claim to know the future?
He's prophetic, not infallible.
I'm talking about the future. So what if I'm not up on recent history? I'm prophetic, not infallible.
I think you are neither. But at least you have shown me there is truly life beyond death.
Not necessarily, but you'll find that out soon enough.
I am on Anlashak, and shall remain so until I pass beyond. I could no more betray the Anlashak than my fingers could betray my hand. Our talk is done.
Your loss.
Lockley begins to realize that she might be a little bit further away from Babylon 5 than she first thought. She tries to reroute some of the systems, which requires a password. Zoe's dead is not really a good password.
Yeah, no.
No. Imagine that every day you're typing that in. I mean, let her go, for goodness sake. Change your password.
Well, I guess that's a little bit of character development for Lockley, who we really don't know at all.
No. Lockley gets in touch with Garibaldi and tells him to try to get in touch with the rest of the station. Dodger is not impressed that Garibaldi is trying to set up communications rather than spending time with her, but he manages to set up the communications in 17 minutes. Lockley broadcasts a message right across the station. When normality is resumed, everything will return to how it was before, and all of the dead will return to where they came from. Rebo and Zooty want to give up the entertainment business and do something more worthwhile instead. No one takes a comedian seriously. Comedians don't matter. Just then, Lockley's communication gets through.
She says, although they are 27 light years away from each other, things should sort themselves out at planetary sunrise. As planetary sunrise returns, Mr. Morton disappears. Then Dodger disappears. And just before she disappears, Zoe admits her death was not an accident. As the station is returning to normal, whatever that is, Sheridan is asking Lockley about what happened over the previous night.
Okay, Captain, let me get this straight. You sold Babylon 5 to an alien race for the night, who somehow transported a square mile of this station to their homeworld while apparently filling it with people temporarily returned from the dead?
Yes, sir.
Well, do you have an explanation as to why you did this?
Yes, sir. I thought it was a metaphor, sir.
But what actually happened?
I'll try to be more literal-minded from now on, sir.
Any idea yet what actually happened?
Well, the high IQ boys back home think it might have been a device smuggled onto the station that somehow activates the parts of the brain responsible for memory. And Zach is checking the air ducts to see if it was a gas used to create a similar effect. And Mr. Garibaldi wants to blame the telepaths. Of course, these days he's looking for grounds to blame them for everything from sunspots to hair loss.
So you have no idea what caused it?
No, sir.
It's good to have a mystery once in a while.
It's a mystery.
Yes, sir. But frankly, sir, as long as no one got hurt and the effect seems to have been temporary, I don't have a problem with that. I think we need a little mystery once in a while. Oh, and speaking of mysteries, I have a message for you. It's from someone named Kosh.
What's the message?
When the long night comes, return to the end of the beginning.
Just before they leave, Zooty pulls Sheridan to one side and whispers in his ear. As he walks away, Jakar asks Sheridan, what did he say? Sheridan says, because it tells me to.
Well, you know what we won't tell you to do? Listen to this promo for another podcast right here on the ESO Network.
No, we should tell people to listen to it, not to listen.
Please do.
Please listen to this promo. Seeing as it's the Cosmic Pizza Podcast promo.
Pardon the interruption. We'll bring you back to your podcast in just a moment. But first, promo for the Cosmic Pizza Podcast.
In the Cosmic Pizza Podcast, your pizza delivery guys, Dan, Sean, and Paul, serve you a slice of life.
As we discuss literally anything in the universe.
Conspiracy theories?
Movies that we've liked. Women in comedy, voice actors, film directors and producers, authors. But what we don't talk about is pizzas.
Wednesday, I'm here with you people. It's wild.
What is the Cosmic Pizza? It sounds like some cool people in there.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just like three random dudes that just...
And a lady too sometimes.
It has been known in the past and in the future. And moving on to the trivia. This is the only Babylon 5 episode written by famous fantasy novelist Neil Gaiman, and the only episode of the fourth and fifth seasons not written by JMS himself. Two of the headlines in Morden's newspaper are Earth Senate votes for more funding for Titan terraforming, and Narn Consulate opens on Mars amid much controversy. The Brakiri Day of the Dead is based closely on the Mexican Dia de Muertos, Day of the Dead. Bruce Boxleitner got to show what a professional he is in this episode, thanks to the appearance of Penn Jillette. Boxleitner has openly stated at convention appearances that he personally loathes Jillette, saying at Armageddon Melbourne in 2012, the big one, Jillette, I couldn't stand the son of a bitch. Apologies for language. But everybody on the set said that at least on the surface, both Boxleitner and Jillette were professional and cordial to each other the entire time during the shoot. There you go. I don't know why he doesn't like him.
Yeah.
But maybe if you look online, you'll probably find it. Famed science fiction writer Harlan Ellison, who served as conceptual consultant on most episodes in the series, appears in this episode as the voice of Zooty. The episode is out of sync with the Babylon 5 universe. Malari and Jakar left for the Centauri homeworld in the previous episode. This is obviously assuming that we're running it in the production timeline.
which is strange relations. In the following episode, A Tragedy of Telepaths, Lockley remarks in her opening monologue, although somebody here has written monologue, Londo and Jakar are still on Centauri Prime. Londo and Jakar should not have been on Babylon 5 for the Day of the Dead. So that's why we moved it to here. The second time Morden picks up the newspaper, he holds it straight up. In the next shot, the upper left corner of it sags down. Yeah, well, whatever. When Loxley is working in her quarters, the Sons of the New Desert playing in the background, you will hear Rebo saying, "Ah, Azuti, for you, 50,000 years of human civilization was just something that happened to other people, wasn't it?" In the movie, he says that in the movie. This is copied from the Blackadder 2 episode, Head, where Blackadder says the same insult to Baldrick, referring to the Renaissance. Ooh, total pinch. On the Rebo and Zuti movie marathon, is Sons of the New Desert. In 1933, Laurel and Hardy made Sons of the Desert. Sean, are there any Star Trek connections?
There are. Nothing new. Of course, we've got Harlan Ellison, who wrote the original City on the Edge of Forever Star Trek episode that was highly changed, and there's all kinds of controversy about that, which we don't need to get into. And we have Marie Marshall, who plays Dodger. We've seen her before, and she was Kelsey in the Next Generation episode, Starship Mine.
One of my favorite all-time episodes of Star Trek.
Yes.
Yes.
Fantastic.
And ratings. We rate these episodes out of 5 because we are on Babylon 5. And IMDb rate those out of 10. They have given this. What do you think they've given this, Sean?
I don't know. They never have good ratings. So let's go with
3.9. It's absolutely spot on. You've looked, haven't you?
No, I haven't.
It is a 7.8, which is a 3.9 in our scale. So there you go. Yeah, I would have thought that this would have been a lot higher, but apparently not. It doesn't even make their top 10.
Wow.
So, Sean, go on, surprises. What will you give this episode as a rating?
25 out of 5 jump gates. It's just awesome. I love it. Even with the creepy old Londo scene with Adira, Jakar and all of his hiding from the Day of the Dead stuff, and then being sad that he missed it because everybody had deep revelations. It's good to see Lanier and Morden back. I wish we would have gotten to see Veer. That would have been amazing, but you can't have everything, I guess. But yeah, I love it. So 5 out of 5.
Very good. Dan, what did you think of this? First time you've seen this?
It is the first time I've seen this, not seen this episode before, just like most of season 5. I'm going to pick up from where Sean just left off. Yes, I wanted Veer and Morden, but I wanted it to be that it's the only scene where it's literally Morden comes to life, Veer just turns around, picks up a PPK and just blows his head off because he's not having it. That's it. He's the one character who doesn't have anything to say because he's Veer and he's perfect. He's got nothing to atone for. I wanted more. I just wanted more characters having their moment, bring them up to speed, and then we carry on with the arcs and everything like that. I enjoy Neil Gaiman, so that, you know, I'm gonna love this episode no matter what. After what you said though, Paul, I think it's gonna go down a little bit more in my estimation, in that they didn't bring in that B plot, the whole idea that nobody listens to a comedian. I was kind of hoping that might be the part of the resolve, that maybe the comedians convince the Bracciri to call an end to it on Babylon 5. You know, they've had their time. The sun's almost rising over Epsilon 3. So, you know, let's just call it quits and just end it. And the Bracciri listen to, Zoot Zoot and all this kind of stuff, and they laugh, or something, you know, comedy breaks the cycle or something like that, just to bring it, just to tie it, just that a nice neat bow on bringing the B into the A plot. So I'm going to bring it just down a little bit to 4.8 out of 5. Certainly the most enjoyable of season 5 so far.
Yeah, it puts it into your top 10, so that's,
yeah,
that's
easily
good.
Yeah.
Okay. So yes, I agree with you on everything that isn't Penn and Teller. it's all good. It's all it's interesting. It's all backstory, and we're already into season five, and we know a lot about these characters anyway. And we've even shared these characters. We've seen them with these characters. We know what their stories are, apart from Lockley. And so that's good to get a bit of backstory, but doesn't really increase her character by anything. She's lost a friend, which is sad, and it's well portrayed and it's well done, and there's that did you do deliberately, and I suppose if anybody has sadly lost anybody to a suicide, then maybe that is something that a question that's always on their mind. You know, was it a deliberate thing, or was it an accident, or did you mean to do it? Why did you do it? There are a lot of questions. So yeah, there's a seriousness to that. However, everybody else was just, oh, I've missed you, let's have sex, and that was pretty much it, really. Yeah. A bit disappointing that Jacquard didn't get to see anybody that he could have had. But then, so really, I didn't really feel as though that was anything special. It didn't have that feeling to it. I like the idea of the Day of the Dead. I like the way it was portrayed. I like the way that they've transported back to the planet. It's a missing part of the station. That's a bit of a mystery, but yeah, okay, that's good. Penn and Teller didn't really float my boat. They there were some good bits. Delenn, where they tell the joke and it's, well, actually, it doesn't really mean anything to you, but it does to them because it's, you know, you've missed out on the joke that there. But the rest of it didn't really sort of do anything for me. It was just an episode. It was a good episode, but it was just an episode. I was going to ask you, Dan, was your rating in any way influenced by Sean saying, you know, obviously behind the scenes that we've been building up to it, that this is his favorite episode? Were you waiting in anticipation and thinking, oh, it's going to be really good, and then it delivered?
I have to admit, I was worried because like it was his favorite episode. Like, what if I watch this and it's like, oh my god, I just don't like it. So I was worried, but then I just enjoyed it, and there were these moments, these little gems. There was the Delenn moment where she just bursts out laughing, and it's not a funny joke to us, but because we're not Minbari, we don't get it. But we do get that sort of jump forward as well. Even though we've had these ghost characters confront them about their past, we have things like Lanier. You are going to, you know, betray the Anhel's Art. You're going to betray them in the end. So there's a whole setup here. Kosh has his mysterious warning. There is a jump forward as well as looking back. So I kind of enjoyed that and pushing for. And like I say, it's the one thing I didn't know was missing was that cosmic element to Babylon 5. We've been so bogged down in the brown that we haven't gone that high. And it just feels like it's a nice return to what the last four seasons were all about. So that kind of what pushed me up. And then you put the words Neil Gaiman wrote this episode onto it, and that just pushed it up for me.
Yeah. No, it's a bit strange that, because I mean, when it gets to spiritual stuff, I suppose I can forgive anything science fiction, but then when it gets to sort of all this could almost really happen type of stuff, and I get a bit annoyed about it. So why did they all appear as perfectly normal people? Why wasn't Morden like one of the characters out of Ghosts? If you watched that BBC program, if you managed to see it in America, the guy with the headless ghost, you know, and he's got his head's over there and his body's over there.
Oh, that would have been awesome.
Yeah, that would be great. Morden walking around with his head under his arm, saying some bastard put me on a spike, which he did. He did mention, but why wasn't Zoe lying on the floor covered in cockroaches and spewing up and looking like death warmed up? You know, but they all come back perfectly normal, as though nothing's ever happened. I mean, apparently this girl had taken drugs for most of her life and was out of it most of the time. Why was she acting normal and being normal, etc.?
Good point.
So,
when you die, you go back to your ideal version of who you were. I don't know. But yeah, the funny thing is, this episode has Dodger in it. And that was the episode Gropos, which I remember enjoying, and you guys hate. So.
there it is. Gropos.
That was a low one. Yeah.
Dan gave it a 2. I gave it a 2.5. And you gave it a 4. So, yes, it was very much so.
I think if Garibaldi had been meeting up with the guy, the drill sergeant, like, all right, you maggots, I think that there, yeah, that it would have tanked this episode. But because it was Dodger, I let it off. It's fine.
Yeah, or he's there and he's looking around. He can hear somebody in the room and he looks up and it's the guy who was in the chandelier at the top there.
He's still swinging there, still but swinging, he's dead. It's the skeleton.
You left me up there, you bastards.
Zach's trying to get him down with a hook. And just, oh, come on.
Yeah. So, what did I say? Okay. So I'm going to give this a four out of five. It's good. It's good, but it's no better than a four, in my opinion. Obviously, Sean, I get what you're saying. You love it to bits because you don't know really why you love it to bits, but it's just, it's resonates in some way. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I can see why Dan gives it a 4.8, but at the same time, it just didn't. I watched it and I was slightly disappointed by it.
I was actually surprised that it held up as well as I remember.
Yeah.
Since I hadn't seen it in years and years.
Yeah, that's true.
I thought there was more to it, to the visitations, but still, it was art.
Very good. Okay. So that's the end of this episode. Join us again next week when we will be discussing Season 5, Episode 13. The core is mother. The core is father.
Oh, good. More Psychor stuff.
I love
telepaths.
God's sake.
Remember,
in the brown again.
How can you say that? They've all gone. All the telepaths are gone. Don't worry about them.
They're in a better place. Get the tambourine. They're in a better place.
Light the candles. Here comes Beverly Crusher.
Crossover. Oh yes.
Just that. They're all having sex.
You can't leave that in the recording.
They're all having sex with each other in the all amongst the candles, and she's the only one having the sex with the candle. Oh my god, it's an orgy. Look at all these candles.
And she's the normal one.
If you have any thoughts on this episode, why not send in some feedback to the epsilon3@gmail.com. That's 3 spelled T-H-R-E-E, not the number. Or you can find us on our Facebook page. Just search for the Epsilon3.
Well, if you have any other problems, any other questions at all, just ask.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.